My name is Lissa Hattersley. I was born December 8, 1951, to Ralph Marshall Hattersley, otherwise known as Hat, sometimes Marsh, and Margaret Elizabeth Hattersley, sometimes mostly known as Mitzi. And they were my parents. They divorced when I was 7. I was born in Rochester, New York. I was born in Rochester, New York, but my parents divorced when I was 7. And after that, my brothers and I lived with my mother, but we split our time between a small town in upstate New York in the Finger Lakes area called Canandaigua, New York, and New York City, where my father lived, and we spent a lot of time there too. And at first, it was the Lower East Side in Manhattan. And so it was quite an interesting contrast. It made my life, our lives, interesting, I'd say, very colorful. And small town, Finger Lakes living, was bucolic, beautiful little town, very conservative. Although we weren't, my parents were basically beatniks, and we were sort of latchkey kids because my mom worked a lot. And in New York City, my dad taught at different schools. He taught at Columbia, he taught at the School of Visual Arts, he taught at Pratt for a while, and at first he was kind of broke, and he and my stepmom lived in the Lower East Side, so we saw what that was like. And gradually he made more money and moved uptown, and but it gave me an interest in city living. And the whole time I was growing up in Canandaigua, I had this idea that I would move to the village and live in Greenwich Village on Bleecker Street and do all that stuff. So that was kind of a starting point. The first time I ever came to Austin was 1970, and I was 18, and at the time I was living with my father and stepmother in Manhattan, but my best friend decided that she wanted to break up with her boyfriend, and so we hightailed it to Berkeley, California, to visit a friend of hers. And then we told my dad at some point that we were going to hitchhike to Mexico. And so he sent us round-trip tickets to Austin because my brother Cleve was living here by then. And so he was trying to get us to not hitchhike to Mexico, which really wasn't a very good idea. And so we came to Austin. And I was just here for a couple of months, and then I went back to New York, and then moved here about a year and a half later. And so I lived here in the 70s. Long story, then I moved to New York, back to New York City in about 1982. So I lived there for most of the 80s, and then moved back here in about 1992, 93. And, well, New York in the 80s was a wild time. But I missed everything that happened here in the 80s, and apparently there was a lot of stuff going on here also. So my mom sang, and we had a rocking chair, and when I was a real little kid, I loved sitting in her lap and her singing to me. I thought it was the most special thing. She had a really pretty voice, and she never sang professionally. She just sang around the house. But when I was in school, I discovered that I could sing pretty well, and you know, started joining choruses. And in high school, I was in every vocal group I could get in. I was in the chorus, and I was in madrigal singers, and the folk group, and the a cappella group, and went to see music whenever I had the opportunity. the first show that I saw that just blew me away. I was in New York and I was visiting my father and stepmother, and they took me to see Judy Garland at the Palace, and I must have been about 14, and it was just amazing. It was just amazing. It was at the end of her life, and she was already getting bad press, but she was incredible. I just remember having goosebumps all over my entire body for the whole show. And so that was a pretty important moment, I would say. I listened to a lot of jazz around the house when I was growing up because my mom was a fan of people like Sarah Vaughan and Billie Holiday. And but at the same time, we were listening to rock and roll, and you know, we had all the, my brothers bought all the records. I didn't personally have to buy records because they were both older than me and somehow had more money. And so they got the records and I benefited from it. You know, the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, the Yardbirds, you know, all the people that were happening at the time. And I guess, continuing on, the next big show that I remember that blew me away was the summer after I graduated from high school, and I was visiting, I was in New York, this was the springtime, I hadn't graduated yet. I was visiting New York, and I went to the Fillmore East because two childhood friends and my brother were working there, and they got me in to see the band. And I sat in the balcony overlooking the band, and this is the band, and it was during their Big Pink era, and it was the most wonderful show. It was, they were just spot on vocally. They had, you know, four-part harmonies, and it was the band. And so that was the first rock and roll show that I saw that blew me away. That would be 1969. Well, I've been in Greasy Wheels on and off all of my adult life. We started in I joined the band that had already formed before I got to it in 1971, and I joined. And Greasy Wheels has always been a fluid band, going from alternative country to psychedelic to a little R&B, a little gospel, a little reggae thrown in there. In fact, I remember in the 70s we were shooting a television show with Willie Nelson and Jimmy Buffett. It was outside of town somewhere on a ranch, and we're between shoots. And we were inside, and somebody had a TV on, and the Bob Marley was on somehow. I don't know exactly what it was, but it was the first time we ever actually heard reggae. And it was, you know, affected us so strongly that we had to work up some reggae into our set. So we did. So basically, just about any kind of music, I can get behind anything good. And Greasy Wheels has done a lot of different stuff. We've backed off from playing a lot. In fact, we may just quit playing live. We're doing a show in a couple of weeks at Threadgills, and it's the 50th anniversary of the Summer of Love that we're celebrating. And it's kind of being advertised as the last live performance of Greasy Wheels, and I'm sort of in denial, so I don't know if it really is going to be the last one, but it may be. But meanwhile, I have started playing with three guys in a little combo, and we are leaning more towards jazz, although it's not hardcore jazz. I'd say it's more pop jazz, and we do some gigs at the Elephant Room and different places. It's for me, it's a chance to do all the kinds of stuff that Greasy Wheels never really did. We do some standard jazz tunes and some tunes in a jazzy manner. I say jazz-ish. Basically, my attitude is a good song is a good song. And if you can find an interesting way to perform a good song, that's great. I am not a prolific songwriter. I do write some, but I consider myself an interpreter. And there's so many good songwriters everywhere, you know, so it's not a problem. So I don't know if that answers, you know, what kind of music? Basically anything except opera and, you know, the straight-ahead Nashville-type country. I like old country, you know, the old stuff. Hank Williams, Johnny Cash, you know, the roots country. But I find that even the term Americana kind of bothers me. I don't know exactly why, but, you know, most music is American. Most of the music that we listen to is American, whether it's North American or South American. You know, there are some influences from Europe, but Europe mostly listens to America, so I don't know what that says. But the term Americana, it's a cliche, and anyway, I should just shut up. I don't want to, you know, offend anybody. Authenticity, inspiration, truthfulness, and then the original, can you play your instrument? Do you have good pitch when you sing? The obvious, that's sort of stating the obvious. Originality, you know, there's a lot of talent in this town. When we started out playing, it was basically a two or three club, three or four band town. You know, it's like it was one horse town back in the 70s kind of thing. And now, because so many people have moved here and it turned it into the music, live music capital of the world, there's just so much talent here, and I appreciate the fact that so many people are trying to find their own niche, and there's a lot of excellent music coming out of this town, I'll just say that. I can't really say I have a tradition, because I don't stick to, you know, one genre of music. But it's kind of like life, though, truthfulness, you know. That's what you look for. Well, everybody that I've played with has been fun, or otherwise I wouldn't have, you know, been with it. Greasy Wheels has always been fun. Greasy Wheels has been three or four different combinations of players. We started out with one group, and then it morphed into a different group with different people. And then we quit playing for a couple of decades, and then we reunited in about 1999 and had another group of people. And then that sort of switched over to the current group. And, you know, it's all been fun. When I was in New York in the 80s, I had a little group called Sweet Liss and the Swells. And because at the time I was working at the Lone Star Cafe, one of my jobs was to draw the ads for the Village Voice, the calendar ads. And Mort Cooperman, the guy that booked the bands there, was sort of like the uncle that I never had. And he wanted to promote via the Village Voice in a way that was unique. And so rather than doing computer ads, he wanted the hand-drawn look. And so that's what we did. Somebody did it before me, and then I took over. And he found out that I was also a musician. Or actually, he knew I was a musician because Greasy Wheels played there when they first opened in 1979. This is the Lone Star Cafe I'm talking about. And so when I moved there, I put together this little group, Sweet Listen the Swells, and we got to open shows there. We got to open for Dr. John several times, and we opened for Cornell Dupree, who was a jazz player that came from a group. There was a group called the Gad Gang that was named after Steve Gadd, who was the drummer. And then this whole group of musicians that were all fantastic. And so we got to open shows like that. And that was really fun because the players I was working with were just terrific. And so that was fun for me. And more recently, coming back after Greasy Wheels reunited and started playing, that's been fun. And then my current little combo, which is Trip Me and Trip Trio, me and three guys, that's fun. I can't compare them to each other, because they've all been fun in their own way. In other words, I've never had to be in a band where I had to quit out of disgust. I've always had fun, and they never blew up. You know, there were groups that had their time, and we've played, and then moved on, or didn't, because I'm still playing with two of them. So, it's all been fun. The therapeutic quality of playing and making music is not to be denied. Every musician will tell you the same thing in one way or another, that when you play music, no matter how sick you are or how depressed you are, somehow when you play music, it lifts your spirit and can even lift your physical being and take away whatever it is that was bringing you down. And that's the most wonderful thing about an artistic endeavor. And I guess painters could say the same thing, sculptors, writers. Therapeutic quality. Of course, now, there's the dark side. I guess you have to say that when there's a writer's block or a, you know, creative block happening in your life, that can be also painful. But it's like having a relationship with somebody. You know, you love somebody, and sometimes it hurts. That's just the way it is, right? In general, oh, the future is looking pretty darn golden. And with the current political climate being what it is, it's more important than ever for artists to do what they do, because the world is in such pain, or at least many of us are. So much bad news happening right now. It's unbelievable. And so it's up to creators and writers and musicians and artists and thinkers to do whatever they can do to lift it up. So the good news is there's a lot of reason to do that. And the good news is there's a lot of people out there to do that. And so the future's good. It's in good hands. A lot of these great musicians in this town, a lot of them are real young. And there's a lot of really, I used to see people that were 10 or 20 years younger than me, and like I'd feel a little bit of, you know, competition, or I'd be nervous about it. But more and more I see, I love the 10-year-olds that make the 12-year-olds nervous. and the 12-year-olds that make the 18-year-olds nervous, and on. But, you know, it's nonstop. It's there, and, you know, we don't have to worry about the future. Unless, you know, the whole world blows up. Oh, it was just the thing to do in the 70s. I mean, you know, had a lot of free time, too. Back in the 70s, you could live on next to nothing. It was cheap, you know, cheap eating, cheap rent, places to play, a thing to do. And I could say, well, I didn't choose music. Music chose me. I probably would have been influenced by somewhere else. If I'd been living in California or another country, I would be influenced by wherever it was I was living, to whatever extent I am influenced by my environment. But I had music in me before I ever came here, so it would always have been in my life, and it would always be part of who I am, whether or not I ever came to Austin, for sure. Well, my favorite venues back in the old days were, of course, Armadillo and Soap Creek Saloon. And then even before that, we had places like The Hungry Horse and Bevo's. And there were places on the east side I never got to play, but I got to go to now and then, Isle Club. And there was a place called Bonnie's. This is a long time ago. While in New York, mostly the Lone Star Cafe was the place to be. Got to play there many times. And then coming back here, I like playing the Elephant Room a lot. Even though what we do is jazz-ish, and we're not hardcore jazz, we play happy hours. I just like the sound of the room there, and the feel of it. So I'd say that is my favorite place to play right now. And that's with the Trip Trio, little combo I sing with. And Strange Brew was a good place. I'm sorry that went by the wayside. We play a couple of places that aren't music places first and foremost. We play the Evangeline Cafe, and I love the vibe of that place. The owner is a friend of mine, and the food is good, and, you know, it's the place is spirit. And Greasy Wheels has played a place called The Bugle Boy. And I like what that place has going for it. Really good sound, and the people that run it have good intention. You know, they're activists, and they do for their community. And then there's Threadgills here, which tries to carry on the tradition of the Armadillo, thanks to Eddie Wilson. And that's where we're doing our 50th anniversary of the Summer of Love show soon. So that's a good place. Back in the day, it's hard to tell stories about back in the day without getting into trouble and crossing over a couple of lines, because things were pretty wild back in the 70s. So the real stories are to be told by somebody else with freer rein than I feel like I should have right now. You know, I was thinking about these questions, and I think the worst experience I ever had at a show back in the 70s wasn't music related. Technically, it was when we were doing, Greasy Wheels was playing a show at the Armadillo, and we were doing two sets, and we played one set, and we had a good draw, so there was a good audience. And then I got a phone call during the break, and one of my roommates called me to tell me that my dog had been killed, and I had to go back up on the stage for the second set, and I cried through the entire set, but I couldn't tell anybody why I was crying, and it was just the worst thing. I can almost revisit that feeling that I had at the moment. It was, you know, the worst. And then I guess one of the funniest was playing Halloween shows at the Armadillo with Jim Franklin doing his thing and Big Ricky, the Guacamole Queen, doing her thing. And it was just a good time to be alive in Austin in the 70s. All the artists were here, you know, and half of them lived at the Armadillo. And I still think all of that going on in the 70s really is what kicked it off and what made Austin what it is today. Because the word got out. Back in the early days, well, Greasy Wheels was together for a few months before my older brother Cleve, who was the leader and is the leader of Greasy Wheels, did a stupid thing. Or he'd already done this, actually. He'd gotten busted with some marijuana, and the court date was set after Greasy Wheels had been playing for months, and I was already in the band. And he was sentenced to some hard time in Huntsville, and so we had these shows, you know, May the Circle Be Unbroken, and people were wearing shirts that said Free Greasy on them, and it was the sort of the beginning of outlaw country. And here he was, this guy that was a real outlaw because, of course, he was going to prison. And so we continued on in his absence and still played. I stepped up and started being more of a leader and doing lead vocals more than I had been. And through a series of sort of backroom events, he ended up getting out 6 years earlier than he should have gotten out. He got pardoned. And so when he came out, we had a big show with Billy Joe Shaver and all these people, and, you know, welcoming him back into society. And as a result of all the hoopla, we ended up getting signed to a major record deal with London Records, and that was a pretty big deal. But it was kind of funny because it really was the beginning of outlaw country. And you know, this is about the time when the hippies and the beer drinkers started associating with each other, and Willie Nelson had a lot to do with that. And so, anyway, I could, you know, there's a lot of stories, but it's funny because I don't have that great a memory for details on a lot of things, you know. A lot of things happened, and there are other people that were there that tell better stories, because I don't remember a lot of things. It happens. Yeah. But it was a good time to be here, and I know people say it still is a good time to be here, and they really hate hearing us old people talking about how Austin's changed and you should have been here. But it's true. I mean, it was a wild time. It was a good time to be here. And I'm happy that everybody's still having fun.